now on a mark of 117, so you'd be a little bit worried about that, I think. I think it's very, very hard to get past the front three in the market here. Santa Rosa Hire and Anna Bonina, I think that you can...
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Happy to have you on board for a Sunday review. We'll do some stakes recaps. We'll do a little handicapping. I think we'll take a look at some Belmont action. I just pulled up and looked on Twitter. They have announced they're on the turf today down in New York. They were on the turf yesterday, but they were having some weather as we were watching the races. There was a little bit of precipitation, but they stayed on the turf. We'll take a look at some of those turf races, turf stakes from Belmont yesterday. But they're on the turf today. So as I say, if we do a little handicapping, we'll give out some thoughts on Belmont. Last segment, we'll be joined by Frank Vespi from theracingbiz.com. Covers racing down the Mid-Atlantic, primarily Maryland. And I thought we'd catch up with Frank because, obviously, less than a week away, the Preakness down in Baltimore. We'll get some thoughts on the Preakness and Pimlico racing overall. And Frank and one of his other writers at the Racing Biz had a little point-counterpoint there. And you can check it out if you go to the Racing Biz. But a point counterpoint on a topic that has been kind of buzzing around social media the past few days, ever since Rich Strike announced, the connections of Rich Strike announced they would be bypassing the Preakness and heading to the Belmont. There's been a little bit of a debate out there on maybe restructuring the Triple Crown. And I saw Randy Moss, NBC's Randy Moss, tweeted out within the past day or so something to the effect of lengthening the schedule might make sense. And Frank's take with the point-counterpoint, I think, is in the same vein. And the other point, you know, kind of keeping the traditional. I was kind of a traditionalist, I think. Now it's at the point where if they said, and the game plan would be, you know, 21st century racing, a two-week break. Just most trainers, that's not their thing. So the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness, then three to the Belmont, it's so condensed, it's out of the wheelhouse of a lot of 21st century trainers. And so I think the thought process is we'll make it, you know, the Derby stays the first Saturday in May, then you go a month away to the Preakness, and then you go maybe July 4th for the Belmont Stakes. And so they're all about a month apart. And as I say, I was kind of a traditionalist, but now if they changed it, I don't think it would matter to me in particular. People say, oh, it's a tough thing to do, and let's keep it that way. There are arguments out there that it would be tougher when you stretch it out. You have to keep your horse at the top of the game for a longer period of time. You would pull in maybe some more of those new shooters and late developers. And the fact is, if you look at the sequence of Triple Crown races, really going back in history, it wasn't always at this place where it is now on the calendar. So as I say, I don't have a big feeling one way or the other. I'm perfectly fine the way it is. And I think there's a lot of consternation as well this year because, the Derby winner is going to skip the Preakness. And that is not affecting me whatsoever because I just could not see him winning the Preakness. I think it had Epicenter or Zandon won the Derby and their connection said we're skipping the Preakness, I think then I would be a little more like, oh, wow, no shot at a Triple Crown. It's hard for me to envision Rich Strike as a Triple Crown winner. And so I was not, when they announced they were going to miss, I didn't, you know, announce they were going to skip the Preakness. I was not of the thought process of, oh, gee, no chance at a Triple Crown. Because pretty much 10 seconds after he came under the wire in the Derby, I was thinking, Triple Crown probably not in the cards this year. Not to take anything away from the Derby victory, but I've already said it. I think it was a huge fluke. And, boy, it's just it'll be interesting to see what he does in the Belmont Stakes. But, again, it just seemed like a really, really fluky result in the Derby that where things just kind of, you know, all the stars aligned, and I don't know whether that's in the cards again for Rich Strike as the season progresses, but we shall see. Again, a week or so away, less than a week away from the Preakness, and things are shaping up, even without the Derby winner, Secret Oath, the Oaks winner, and they're an epicenter and early voting. It's still going to be a nice couple of days of racing, Black Eyed Susan and Preakness weekend, and some nice undercard stakes that will provide plenty of fireworks, even without the Derby winner. All right, speaking of fireworks and nice stakes racing, boy, Belmont yesterday, a really, really nice stakes card. And we'll take a look at some of that action here. Clearly, you know, the races yesterday will play out and be, you know, the winners will be horses to watch going into the summer, and likely at Saratoga, particularly this first winner, because they came out of it saying Saratoga may be the next spot on their agenda, and started stakes action yesterday at Belmont with the Vagrancy. Short field of five, but a select field in there. Bella Sophia, who had won the test in her fourth career start last summer up at Saratoga, plugs a grade one win in her fourth start in fine fashion, followed that up with a win in the Gallant Bloom, and then went out to Del Mar and ran fourth in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. She hadn't been seen since then, so coming back off a little bit of a layoff yesterday. Miss Brazil looked to have the early speed, and she did very early, but then, you know, she was surpassed. Bella Sophia was kind of stalking her early, took the lead. But, man, you couldn't ask for a better stretch duel than this. On the handicappers report yesterday, Anthony Mormino said he was going to take a little shot with Frank's Rocket, the number two horse. I like Bella Sophia, and boy, as they say, you couldn't ask for a better stretch duel. Frank's Rocket on the inside, Bella Sophia on the outside, and they're dead tight right here. And it looked like Bella Sophia maybe got a little indenture head, and then, woof. That is chart margin, winds up to be a nose. The 2-5 favorite, Bella Sophia, gets it done. Frank's Rocket run second. Bella Sophia for Rudy Rodriguez, Luis Saez on board, Frank's Rocket, Flavian Pratt on board, newly arrived in New York, or relatively newly arrived in New York, and making a splash, certainly, gets the most from Frank's Rocket. Bill Mott, Frank's Rocket's trainer, was quoted as saying something to the effect of, I couldn't be prouder of her. I mean, what could you ask? She laid it down the stretch and just, you know, came up that short. Bella Sophia, as I said, they came out of this, the connections, and essentially said the next start might not be until July 27th. That's the grade two honorable miss up at Saratoga. Their main goal being the grade one ballerina up at Saratoga towards the end of August. So we might not see her again until Saratoga. We'll see. I mean, that was what the quote was following the race. But, man, that was and after a ding-dong battle like that, maybe a little time off is warranted, because that was really some stretch duel. It was a great way to kick off the stakes action down in New York yesterday with, as they say, a ding-dong battle between two very, very nice filly and mare sprinters, Bella Sophia getting it done in the Vagrancy yesterday. That makes seven career starts, five career wins, a second, and the only off-the-board finish being that fourth-place finish in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint last year behind CeCe. So Bella Sophia back, kicking off her four-year-old season in fine fashion. The Run Happy yesterday. Grade three event for sprinters. I liked Answer In. I thought it was a pretty competitive field, and I took a little shot with Answer In. Flavian Pratt on board. Answer In At 6-1, I thought I was getting a decent little price, the longest price on the board. The betting public had the other four horses all right in the mix. 2-1, a couple at 5-2, one at 3-1, amongst officiating, drafted, Chateau. And answer in the number four horse. Coming around the turn, I thought we were in a good spot with Flavian Prop, but then you can see on the far outside there, I subsequently read one of the reins broke. So answer in was done on the turn as Flavian Prop was just trying to keep control. But you can see here on the lead, it is number one Chateau, typical of Chateau being out there on the lead, but also typical of Chateau. Tosses in the towel a little bit, gets run down late by drafted. Jose Ortiz on board for Dave Duggan. Duggan, the trainer, Chateau second, officiating third in there. But again, Chateau now 41 career starts and 12 second place finishes as compared to 8 wins. He's a talented runner, but he just, you know, going back over the past year or so, tends to come up a little bit short often. So Chateau for Michael Dubb and Rob Attriss. If you had him at the top of the stretch, if you had him mid-stretch, you had to feel pretty good. But then you saw drafted coming, and drafted 8 years old, and that had to put him, well, close to. I was going to say over a million. It wouldn't have been over a million, but he's now over $900,000 picking up the winner's share of the purse yesterday. So drafted a very talented stakes runner. That was career win number 8. In career start number 27 for drafted. Also on the card yesterday, we had the Man of War. Again, a small but select field in here. After the scratch, a field of 5 ran. And this was this was an interesting race because you had Ybir in here, who was the nice winner of the Breeders' Cup Turf last year after having won the Jockey Club Derby. So came over to the United States for Charles Appleby and won a couple of stakes in September and November, did both of them from off the pace. Started this season in Dubai and then England with a couple of second-place finishes, but took the money yesterday going off at 55 cents to the dollar. I wondered if Gufo might wind up being the favorite. I liked Gufo off the win to start the 5-year-old season down the Pan American at Gulfstream. Gufo winds up being 2-1 with Ybir, as I said, being 55 cents to the dollar. Gufo, the number 2 horse, Ybir, the number 3 horse, all chasing number 5, Highland Chief, who was pretty much, you know, kind of attending the pace and then took the lead and holds off the 2 favorites and does so as the longest price in the field of 5 at 19-1. Trevor McCarthy and Graham Motion. And if you were watching yesterday here on the network, the NIRA signal, they had Maggie Wolfendale out on horseback doing post-race interviews. And she caught up with Trevor McCarthy after the win. And Trevor McCarthy, clearly very, very emotional. It was his first grade one win. And he said it was also special doing it for Graham Motion. They subsequently caught up with Graham Motion out by the winner's circle. And he was kind of emotional, too, talking about, as Graham did, Trevor said, you know, I started riding for Graham, and he kind of taught me the game. And Graham said, yeah, started riding for me when he was 16 years old. So Trevor McCarthy now in New York and putting together a nice winter and now into the spring in New York. And it's going to be interesting to see as he continues being based in New York. I think he's a rider who deserves to be in New York, but to get a win like, you know, in a traditional grade one, and beat a couple of solid runners like Gufo and Ybir, it was clearly a big victory for jockey and trainer. As I say, they were both clearly emotional afterwards, but a nice victory for Highland Chief at $40.40. Can't knock that, but Gufo and Ybir just came up a little bit short. You know, in a short field, I thought a bond might be interesting with the speed. In a short field, speed in a short field can be a little bit dangerous. Saban did go out there and take the lead, but tracked closely by Highland Chief. And when Saban kind of backed up, Highland Chief took over late and was able to hold off the two closers. And again, speed a little bit dangerous in a short field. And that's kind of the way it worked out yesterday with fractions, 25 and change, 51 and change, 117 and change. So Highland Chief having enough left in the stretch to hold off, as I say, two really nice quality turf stakes runners in Gufo and Yabir. So man of war yesterday. Highland Chief, Trevor McCarthy, his first grade one victory. So congratulations to him. Some milestones over the past few days. Dylan Davis getting his 1,000th career victory. Trevor McCarthy, first grade one. So over the past, three or four days down in New York, some notable jockey milestones being passed. Belmont yesterday, also the Peter Pan, which traditionally kind of, you know, horses that had shown some promise and maybe gone in the wrong direction or late developers, that's traditionally the Peter Pan. And coming out of this, you have some three-year-olds who maybe will be horses to watch going into the summer. And certainly you can traditionally get one or two at least out of here going to the Belmont Stakes. Won't be surprised if that's the case after yesterday's race. I liked Electability, the Chad Brown Klarovich runner, who had won a maiden breaker two back and an optional claimer to follow that up. And I thought, could be kind of a budding, nice little three-year-old for a potent team. So I had Electability on top. But I put We the People right underneath. We the People had shown a lot of ability down at Oaklawn in the first two career starts and then kind of tossed in a clunker in the Arkansas Derby. But We the People, the number four horse here, boy, he rebounded very nicely in the Peter Pan. Flavian Pratt on board. Golden Glider, who I thought a little bit intriguing for Mark Cassie. That one's just going to get up for second over Electability. But, man, they are far back from We the People, who, again, third win in the fourth career start. The only blemish was that Arkansas Derby. And they talked to Rudy Brissett after the race in the winner's circle. And he was kind of like, hey, that Arkansas Derby is just a little bit of a head scratcher. Reading comments afterwards, Flavian Pratt said the Arkansas Derby just got in some traffic and so couldn't get out where he likes to be, closer to the front. He was on the front end all yesterday. And Pratt said in the Arkansas Derby, he was not comfortable with where he was behind horses. And he would take the bit and then he was off and take it. And Pratt said that Arkansas Derby just was not a good race for him, where he placed early because of how it came out of the gate. But it worked nicely in the rebound yesterday with We the People getting it done again on the front end. Chart margin over 10 lengths. He went off as the second choice. Yeah, the favorite was Set Sail, coming in from Southern California. I had that one third and certainly thought it was playable. But when I looked up at the board in here yesterday and saw the horse was the favorite, I thought, you know, it comes out of a maiden breaker in Southern California. Wouldn't play against the horse. I had it down in the third spot, but seeing that the favorite for a horse without a whole lot of seasoning and only the maiden victory, that seemed like a tall task. And Set Sail, the favorite, winds up running sixth in the field of eight. But 10-plus length win for We the People. Flavian Pratt on board for Rudy Brissett. Rudy Brissett, Windstar Farm and Company. And they said, you know, as typical coming out of these kind of races, hey, let's see what he's like. You know, we'll take a look at the horse. But the Belmont Stakes is clearly a very possible and perhaps likely next start for We the People. So he adds some intrigue to that final leg of the Triple Crown season. And finally at Belmont yesterday on the stakes action, it was the Bogey. I liked Lamista over Rozier. They were both Chad Brown, Peter Brandt runners, and I just took a little shot with Lamista. But Rozier, clearly, you know, we showed on the show yesterday the the race on Arc Day last year, Group 1 over at Longchamp, which Rogier won. So kind of defining, adding to the definition of that one as a really high-class turf filly. Came over here to the Breeders' Cup and had some trouble in that and wound up 7th. But rebounded very nicely yesterday for Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. Rogier's going to be the number one horse here and win pretty easily. Our Flash at a couple of big prices underneath. Our Flash 28-1, the longest price on the board, runs second. High Opinion third. Lamista, who I liked, winds up running fourth in here. But again, Chad Brown, Peter Brandt, bingo, bango, bongo. That barn is loaded with the female side on the turf this season. And as I say, being Chad Brown, beating Peter Brandt, we will see a number of their runners, you would have to think, right up the road at Saratoga this summer. Won't be surprised if Rogier is one of them. But a nice victory yesterday in the Bogey for that team. Wanted to look at some more action before we take our break. We looked at the Peter Pan in New York for that. Again, that kind of level of three-year-olds that late developers had shown some promise and then kind of had some disappointments, but maybe ones to watch going forward. The Long Branch yesterday, similar kind of a situation over at Monmouth. Three-year-olds going a mile and 70. I thought Dean's List from Todd Pletcher fit in that category of started the career out very promising. Couple of wins, maiden special in the debut, optional claimer to follow up, and then a decent little second behind Morello in the Gotham. Faltered a little bit and ran fourth in the Bayshore, but I thought that field yesterday in the Long Branch would be right in the wheelhouse of Dean's List. But I also thought Dash Attack, and I said after the first two starts of Dash Attack, down at Oaklawn, December and January, maiden special victory to start the career, and then followed it up winning the Smarty Jones at Oaklawn. And I thought that Smarty Jones victory kind of defined Dash Attack as one to watch. Subsequently, the Southwest, the Rebel, the Lexington did not live up to what we saw in the first two starts. But both of these, Dean's List and Dash Attack, that type of three-year-old that had shown early promise, and then there was some disappointment, so looking to kind of rebound and get back on track and maybe get a confidence builder yesterday, and it winds up to be Dash Attack doing that. Dash Attack, the number one horse here, and Dean's List, the number four horse. Nice little stretch duel between the Ken McPeak runner, Dash Attack, and the Todd Pletcher runner, Dean's List, and it will be Dash Attack getting it done by half a length. I think both of these now have gotten back on track. Will they reach the upper echelon? I don't know. But certainly they're going to be nice three-year-olds through the summer, maybe picking their spots. And depending on, you know, what happens in the next race or two, maybe they do wind up taking a shot in Travers or something like that. But certainly there's enough on the resume now for both of them. And then what they did yesterday to think they'll be worth watching on the three-year-old scene going forward. Samuel Marin, the jockey on Dash Attack, first American victory, I believe. First American victory in, and it's verified here on the DRF stats. It was like his second start. I believe he was riding in Puerto Rico, maybe. I think he's Venezuelan, but he might have been riding in Puerto Rico. But comes to the United States, and not bad. You get your first victory in the United States in a stakes race. So congratulations to him. Yet another jockey on the past few days, getting a little bit of a milestone kind of a situation. At Churchill last night, wanted to pull up their stakes race. Ungraded, but $160,000 up for grabs. The Mamzelle, 5 furlongs on the turf. And I wanted to show this just because of the favorite and the winner. It's Twilight Gleaming for Wesley Ward at 30 cents to the dollar. Twilight Gleaming gets it done under Tyler Gaffleone for Wesley Ward. Be the number 5 horse in here. And again, wanted to show this because this is a horse that had shown a lot of talent already in the career. 6 starts, 6 exacta finishes, 3 wins, 3 seconds. Had tried Royal Ascot last year and wound up 2nd, then went over to Deauville in France and won a stakes race. and boom, gets the victory there last night for Wesley Ward and Stone Street. Again, Tyler Gaffalione on board. Seasonal debut was back in the middle of April at Keeneland, ran second in the Palisades. They follow up with a victory last night at Churchill. And again, I wanted to show it because coming out of that, Wesley Ward was quoting as saying, again, it's one of those, hey, we're going to take a look at the horse. We'll see how he comes out of it and what how she comes out of it and whatnot. And then probably head for Royal Ascot again. So just wanted to show that. As you would assume, when I went to look for the quotes, I was expecting that to be the quote. Yeah, we're headed over. It's Wesley Ward, and he's just been so proficient heading over to Royal Ascot. And given that this one already has European success, it'll be another one of those Americans for us to root for over at Royal Ascot this year. Twilight Gleaming, getting it done last night at Churchill. And speaking of Royal Ascot, we're going to end with a European runner. And I show this because these European races could easily float under the radar. But, man, this is some racehorse. This is going back to Friday at York. It is the Yorkshire Cup, and this is going to be Stradivarius we're going to see winning. 8-year-old Stradivarius, win number 20 in start number 33, but this was his third victory in the Yorkshire Cup. Again, it was his 20th career victory overall. It was his 18th victory in a group race, which gave him a European record, 18 group wins for Stradivarius. It's just been an incredible career for the 8-year-old. He's won the Goodwood Cup 4 times, the Gold Cup at Ascot 3 times, this race 3 times, the Doncaster Cup 3 times, the Lonsdale Cup 3 times. Just 8 years old. And they said that the race was on Friday, and the follow-up articles were, you know, he had a great response from the crowd before the race, a great response from the crowd after the race. And again, as I say, these kind of races, European races, can maybe float a little under the radar. But it's worth taking a look at a horse like this that just over there, a real fan favorite, understandably 8 years old and with that kind of record, 20 for 33. And again, a record number of group wins over there in Europe. Stradivarius getting it done on Friday. And as I said, leading into this, I ended talking about Wesley Ward going to Royal Ascot and said, speaking of Royal Ascot, let's talk some Stradivarius. That's going to be his next move. He's going to try for a 4th win at Royal Ascot in the Gold Cup. So that would be something as well. I mean, Royal Ascot, really the top of the top as far as a condensed high-quality meet to be able to win a stake at Royal Ascot 3 times. I mean, he's already got a great record, but he's going to try for a 4th Gold Cup in a few weeks. So, again, just wanted to take a look at Stradivarius on Friday. Again, putting another exclamation point on a spectacular career. And the articles all said this is likely the last season he'll run as an 8-year-old. It was fun to see him get it done again on Friday. All right, we'll take a break. As promised earlier, we'll do a little handicapping when we come back. In a few minutes after that, Frank Vespi will join us. We'll talk some Preakness and Pimlico and more. Stay tuned.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Birdstone is an outside.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned what you know and make better decisions, better choices. In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrow in the studio. And again, thought we would take a look at some Belmont action for this afternoon, toss out some ideas, maybe take a look at the late pick four on this Sunday. From what I've seen via tweets, via Twitter, we are still on the turf down at Belmont today. So we will take a look again at the late pick four. Not necessarily putting a ticket together, just giving you some ideas because, again, we don't have scratches or anything yet. But taking a look at the kickoff to the late pick four today down at Belmont. Allowance non-winners of one types going 8.5 furlongs. The one turn, mile on 16th down at Belmont. In the sixth, I have it 3, 7, 8, and 5. I'll put Dr. Ardito on top. Chad Brown, Michael Dubb and Company runner, who just is moving on a series of improving buyers over the first four starts of the career. Had a fairly long layoff from April of last year to February of this year, but the two comebackers were two wins, again, with two improved and improving buyer numbers. Looks like a logical player in and amongst this bunch. Todd Pletcher has Jerry the Nipper, who, similar scenario, a long layoff, and since coming back has run a couple of improving efforts. Dr. Ardito was two wins. Jerry the Nipper, it was a fourth-place finish and then an improved second-place finish. But I think, like the top pick, with the third start back, maybe primed for even further improvement, and that's going to put Jerry the Nipper right in the conversation. And then American Rule in the third spot. It's an Orlando Noda runner stepping out of Claiming Company. So this is potentially a little bit of a saltier group. But the last two races kind of indicate this horse will be okay in with this bunch today. Jose Ortiz on board. So in the sixth, 3, 7, 8, and 5. Seventh race at Belmont on Sunday afternoon. We are looking at optional claimers, non-winners of two other than going a mile on the grass. I have a 2, 5, 7, and 9. I thought the 8 was also a little bit playable potentially at a price, but I put Love and Thunder on top. Again, it's Chad Brown getting 9-2. Chad Brown and Flavian Pratt, a horse with only a couple of wins in 11 starts as opposed to 5 seconds. So a little bit camera shy perhaps, but boy, in this particular field, if this horse comes back ready to run, looks like an interesting prospect without question. And we'll see if the morning line holds up, because that's kind of key. I think you have to get a little bit of value. I don't think you want this one to start to go down, because, again, the horse only a couple of wins in 11 career starts, only one of those since arriving in the United States. In the hunt far more often than not, however, but also has to overcome a layoff. But again, Chad Brown, Flavian Pratt, a horse that I think, as I say, matches up nicely with this group if ready off the layoff. Christophe Clement has a European import who hasn't been seen in almost a year. Similar to the top pick, I think the talent is there. What will we get off the layoff? Joel Rosario on board. I think this is going to be a talented runner. Might need a start, but I wanted to toss it in the mix. There's a steady string of workouts down at Payson and most recently at Belmont. So I expect the horse to run well off the layoff, but that's going to be the question mark. Star Seeking goes out for Michael Tabor and Todd Pletcher. Jose Ortiz on board. As opposed to the top two, this one's had a couple races so far this year, but the last one was in February, so there's a little bit of a layoff. Came over from Europe, a couple of starts at Gulfstream. Nice improvement, start one to start two in the United States. Start two, that last start was a nice win. I think the horse is set up to run well this afternoon. But this is a competitive race. As I say, if Love and Thunder comes back ready to run, maybe a slight edge on this group, but not much. In the seventh at Belmont, 2, 5, 7, and 9. And as I say, you get a price on the 8. I wouldn't talk anybody off of that one either. Field of a half a dozen set for the stakes race today, the 8th, the Gold Fever. $100,000 up for grabs for three-year-old sprinters. I have it 3, 4, 6, and 2. Provocateur on top for Todd Pletcher. Five starts so far, a couple of wins, and a second-place finish. Started the career on the turf, kind of interesting, on the turf last October. And that's really the only clunker of the career so far. And they immediately said, man, I don't know about turf. Turf at a mile, let's get to the dirt with a sprint. Ran fourth in the second start, but then, you know, benefited from the experience of the first two. Third career start, broke the maiden. Fourth career start, they went over to Tampa, tried the Pasco stakes race, and ran second. And then they came back over to Gulfstream and won the Hutchison. And so I think it's a horse that maybe they were trying to figure out. The horse was trying to figure it all out. And it really seems like throughout the career has just made a very, very nice progression to the point where that Hutchison kind of stands out. And if that is the level of talent that we can expect from this horse, and I kind of feel like it is. I think he was, you know, moving towards his comfort zone talent-wise. And so we'll look for this one to maybe put a couple together, and I think that'll be good enough. That said, fluid situation for John Terranova. Comes out of a nice win last time at Tampa with a number that's actually better than Provocateur. But again, Provocateur did it in the Hutchison. Fluid situation did it in a maiden race at Tampa. So I fluid situation still has to validate things a little bit. So I'll put that one in the second spot. And then Senbei in the third spot for me. This was, boy, a really nice New York bred last year. Four wins and five career starts for Christophe Clement and Reeves Thoroughbred. And four of those starts and three of those wins were in New York bred stakes races, well over $360,000 in the bank. And I just find it interesting that they're electing to come back in this field as opposed to, you know, picking a spot against state breds to maybe come back. I don't know what, you know, what their schedule is, and maybe the horse is just ready and there's none of those state bred races available, state bred kind of stakes races available. This may have just been the spot that came up, but Senbei going to be interesting to see in the three-year-old debut this afternoon. Eighth at Belmont, the Gold Fever, 3, 4, 6, and 2. And finally, the ninth at Belmont, I have it 8, 4, 2, and 6. I'll put Diamant Damsa on top. Brad Cox trainee comes up from the fairgrounds, made special weight to maiden claiming. Misspelled Moon dropped down to this level last time and ran decently for Ray Handel. And Christophe Clement has maiden special weight to maiden claiming mover Laugh and Play in here in the ninth at Belmont for me, 8, 4, 2, and 6. There are some ideas for the late pick four today at Belmont. As I noted, according to tweets, we're still on the turf at Belmont for Sunday afternoon, so that's good. And, of course, I will be back in a couple hours or so with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon, taking live looks at this Belmont action as well. All right, we'll take a break. As promised earlier, we'll be joined when we come back by Frank Vespi from the RacingBiz.com, doing a great job covering the action down in Maryland. And, of course, Maryland is going to be on all of our minds this coming week with the Preakness coming up on Saturday. So we'll talk a little Preakness, a little Pimlico, and more right after this. Stay tuned. Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops.
My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend Frank Vespi from the RacingBiz.com. Great coverage of racing in the Mid-Atlantic region, but also specifically Maryland. And as I said before the break, Maryland will be on our mind all week long. So who better to reach out to? Hey, Frank, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I wanted to have you on. We'll touch a little bit on your point-counterpoint that you had on the Racing Biz site, because I think that's a topic that has been a buzz amongst social media folks since Rich Strike announced they would bypass the Preakness. But we'll touch on that a little bit and get on some other news. And I thought also set people up for, Pimlico itself, and you could talk a little bit about that track and what the situation is now down in Maryland, as there's been much discussion over the past few years and more. But you and I were talking off the air during the commercial break, because I went to the Racing Biz and saw your radio show yesterday. You had Eric Reed on, and people can go to the Racing Biz and pull up the interview on archive themselves. But I was talking, I said, did Eric have anything interesting to say yesterday? And you added?
Yeah, I mean, we as you said, we had him on and had a interesting interview, and we were sort of joking that he had claimed that horse and he burned up his first condition by winning a Kentucky Derby, so now he can't win an allowance race with him. But he said he was okay because he'd go to a three in life race afterwards. So, but the other thing that was interesting that he said, because one of the things, of course, that I talked with him about is the decision to bypass the Preakness, and I asked him, if the Preakness were 4 weeks out, would you come? And he said, absolutely, we would be there. If it were 4 weeks and 4 weeks, we'd run in all three.
That is very.
And I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that is very interesting. I also think it's hilarious. Yeah, burnt through his condition with the the Derby win, but that is very intriguing and leads into the conversation. And again, I'll tell people to go to the Racing Biz, because you and one of your writers on the Racing Biz did a kind of a point counterpoint: extend the Triple Crown series or keep it traditionally where it is. And you took the point of extending. I said at the top of the show, I used to be a traditionalist, and now I'm not. I have no real feeling one way or the other, because I think there are good arguments on both sides. I saw within the past 24 hours or so, Randy Moss from NBC kind of tweeted out in favor, it seemed like, of maybe extending things a little bit. And as I say, that seemed to be your take. Talk a little bit about the Triple Crown and where we are in the 21st century now, and how things might be changed up for the better if that was the way to go.
Yeah, I think, it's an interesting conversation to have, and my fear is, like many things in racing, it will never be anything more than a conversation. My feeling is this. First off, look, the current configuration, the two-week, three-week configuration, that was solidified in 1969. So let's start with the whole tradition argument. This is not holy writ that was passed down to a grateful populace over the centuries. This is a decision that was made 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So then you got to ask yourself, okay, is it a decision that serves us today? And when you look back at like Secretariat, okay, 4 years after they changed things, here comes Secretariat. When Secretariat ran the Preakness on 2 weeks rest, that was his third consecutive start on 2 weeks rest. He ran in the Wood Memorial on 2 weeks rest. He ran in the Kentucky Derby on 2 weeks rest. He ran in the Preakness on 2 weeks rest. When affirmed the year he won the Triple Crown, later on in the summer, he ran in the Jim Dandy and won that. And 11 days later, he ran in the Travers and finished second to Allie Dar. you know, that's how you handled the good horse in the 70s. They had a limited window. They ran, you know, generally from March to October, and they were busy during those months. That's what you did in the 1970s. In the 2000s and 2020s, which we're in now, nobody handles horses like that anymore. You don't even handle, you know, quote-unquote cheap horses that way anymore. And in the so, you know, when you look at, for example, American Pharoah, the only time in his career that he ran on 2 weeks' rest was the Preakness. Same thing with Justify. The only time. So you're not only asking horses to take on better competition than they've ever seen, against bigger fields than they've seen, and deeper fields, going farther distances than they've ever gone. You're also asking them to do it on a rest period that is completely different from the rest of their careers. And, you know, when you get a situation like the Derby winner not coming into the Preakness, you got to start to ask yourself, are we as an industry putting our best foot forward to the betting public? Or not just the betting public, but the general public? Because let's be honest, the general public outside of our racing bubble doesn't care about the Breeders' Cup, doesn't know that the Travers exists. They care about the Kentucky Derby first and foremost, then the Preakness and Belmont. Yeah. And if the Preakness and Belmont aren't putting their best foot forward, the industry's best foot forward, we're missing an enormous opportunity to deliver the best product to the public. And that seems to me to be an enormous missed opportunity.
Yeah, and a lot of people say it's meant to be hard, and you know, this is difficult. But I think the argument has been put out there, and I think it's a very valid argument. It might be harder if we put it at, you know, a month between and a month between, because then you're going to kind of get horses that are more on their schedule, and you're going to get probably more of those new shooters to jump into the mix as well. So I think the argument that it's supposed to be tough in the 21st century, that doesn't work either, because, again, I think you can make the argument that extending it is going to make it at least as difficult, if not more.
I agree with you completely on that point, because, as you said, look, the Kentucky Rich Strike won the Kentucky Derby. There were six other horses within five lengths. Every one of those horses, those people can at least make a plausible case to themselves, on a different day, we could have won this race.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool for the industry if seven horses came from the Derby to the Preakness and all the horses that have a plausible case at the end of the Preakness went to the Belmont? Wouldn't that be great for the industry? And you're right. I mean, look, Epicenter is going to be the favorite in the Preakness and is your most likely winner, and that was going to be the case whether Rich Strike came or not. But it would be better for the industry, and it would be a tougher race if you had, you know, three, four, or five of the top seven rather than two of the top seven moving forward. And so I agree. And you look back in 2020 when things got screwed up in all sorts of different ways, but you know, the Derby and Preakness were a month apart, and you had two different winners. And, you know, I mean, I just, it's always going to be hard because you're talking about top quality horses facing each other. And that, how often does a horse win three consecutive grade ones? It's not that easy. You know, it's not easy to do. So it's always going to be tough, and it should be tough, and nobody wants it not to be tough. It's just really a question of, you know, and I make this comparison sometimes. People in racing always say, well, if we had a commissioner, basically we'd be like the NFL, which we wouldn't be, but that's a problem for a different day. But look at what the NFL does with their product. They obsessively tinker with it because they want to make sure it's the best product that they can offer the public. They change the rules, they change the playoffs, they extend the season, they, you know, they do all sorts of things. They're constantly tinkering to put the best product on the field. And horse racing, we go, well, we made a decision 50 years ago. We're stuck with it forever.
Yeah, and, you know, you made a great point when you mentioned Secretary and the Wood, because when I got in the game, the Wood was 2 weeks before the Derby, as were a lot of prep races. And you think about that now, stepping back in the bigger picture, tracks in the industry has realized and had for 20 years that doesn't work anymore, and they have moved those races further and further back. So the prep races now are 3 weeks or 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 6 weeks away from the Derby, whereas they used to be a couple of weeks away, the last prep for the Kentucky Derby. Trex just realized that wouldn't work now, but for some reason they can move those prep races and realize that. But boy, we're set in stone with the schedule for the Triple Crown itself, which again, as an industry, is a little bit puzzling.
That's a really, really good point in my mind, Seth, is, you know, we have moved all the prep races. I mean, if you remember, you know, 15 years ago when Barbaro ran and he won the Florida Derby and then didn't have another start till the Kentucky Derby, and everybody said, oh my God, no horse has ever won the Kentucky Derby on a break as long as Barbaro, because it was 5 weeks or whatever it was. And now that's commonplace. You know, times change, and we can either change with them or get left behind. And, you know, increasingly it appears that we're comfortable being left behind.
Yeah, and again, an interesting discussion, and it's been kind of a buzz on social media this past week. And you guys, I thought I'd pull you in to talk a little bit about that. And again, if people want to look at the other side of the argument, your writer has that on theracingbiz.com, and people can check that out as well. One of the other reasons I wanted to have you jump on board is just to we have moved to Pimlico, and again, you're covering a lot of Maryland racing, and most of the year that's over at Laurel. So I just thought I'd have you come on and talk a little bit about, you know, the state of Maryland racing now, and there's been discussions about Pimlico and upgrades there and whatnot. And so just kind of update us on the situation in Maryland and what people can expect this coming week. We've had a week of racing to kind of take a look at Pimlico so far, but talk a little bit about Pimlico overall.
Yeah, I mean, the situation with Pimlico, Pimlico has been the problem that no one could solve for decades in Maryland. You know, it's you need a track with a big capacity for the Preakness, but obviously, you know, it's a little like Belmont. You don't need a track as big as Belmont 364 days a year. Yeah. You need it once. And it's the same thing with Pimlico. And Pimlico is in bad shape, as kind of everybody knows. And so a couple of years ago, the state legislature passed a law enabling the Maryland Stadium Authority, which is who built Camden Yards and the Ravens Stadium, to issue bonds to rebuild Pimlico and rebuild Laurel. That was 2 years ago, and nothing has happened since. And that has been a concern, and the legislature is a little bit antsy with that. And so this year they basically, there's another issue which has to do with tax liability that the owner of Laurel and Pimlico, who these days is Strana Group, would have to incur. And so they're trying to fix that. So the state legislature basically has said, okay, guys, you know, time's a wasting. You need to get down to brass tacks on these projects. So we expect some things to happen by September. They expect some reports to be submitted and some stuff. So all of that's gonna happen. I mean, at some point in the next several years, there's gonna be a new Pimlico. When that is exactly, and what exactly that's gonna look like, well, that's all a little bit challenging to know. But so if you are the sort of person who loves this version of Pimlico, you probably want to get down to Maryland in the next year or two.
Yeah, I have never been to Pimlico, but boy, the artist renderings they've had out over the past years seem like it would be a nice facility. But then you wonder, well, will we get that? And so it's going to be interesting to watch the Maryland scene. Let's talk a little bit about less than a week away, the Preakness, and get some of your. Well, first, give us, what was your takeaway from the Derby itself? I think I kind of imagine you're like, I don't know, 99.999999% of the people where about mid-stretch it looked like, well, this is playing out the way we kind of thought. And then it was like, who's that coming up the inside? But what was your takeaway from the Derby?
Pretty much what you just said is about it. I sure didn't have the winner, I can tell you that. And, you know, it was interesting because I had had conversations with a couple of people ahead of the Derby where we're sort of puzzling about the pace. I mean, it looked like there was going to be some pace, but was it going to be, you know, kind of the old school Derby melting down pace with horses running sprinter fractions, or was it going to be a fast pace for the distance? And it ended up being the kind of old school Derby sprinter style early pace, which which set it up for Rich Strike and a fabulous ride from Sonny Leone, and you know, that's, you know, put it all together, you get an 80-1 horse. I guess I did feel like, you know, I think Epicenter probably ran the best race of any horse in the Derby. He was kind of the only one who was really within hailing distance early, who was still around late. And so that, you know, as you know, the Derby tends to be won. Obviously, to win a Triple Crown race, you got to be really good that day. And the Derby tends to be won by the really good horse that day who's lucky, you know, who gets the trip. The Preakness tends to be won by the horse who's best. And that's probably Epicenter coming out of the Derby, and that's probably how that's going to work. But I don't know. My takeaway was, wow, that was quite a thing. I didn't have a sniff of it.
I think that was everybody. It was a wild finish. But you've kind of alluded to it already. I was going to have you give me some early thoughts on the Preakness. And I'm with you. I liked Epicenter in the Derby. Mid-stretch, I thought, mid-stretch, I thought, Zandon's going to go by. And then a few strides later, I thought, oh, no, he's not. I'm in a great spot here. And then the crazy horse comes up the inside. But all that said, Epicenter looked very good. And so I'm sticking with them in a week, but pulled up a replay here. We're going to take a look at the day before the Derby, the Kentucky Oaks. We're going to watch number one Secret Oath get it done. And at the very least, coming up over the next week, as we anticipated going into Oaks Derby weekend, coming out of the nice performances at Oaklawn, but it'll be the same coming into Black Eyed Susan and Preakness weekend. A lot of the juice there on the story side of things will be focusing on the venerable Wayne Lucas, bringing Secret Oath to try the boys in the Preakness. What are your thoughts on her chances on Saturday?
I think she's going to be live. I mean, I think if you look over the last, say, 25 years, horses that run either in the Oaks or Derby Day, those horses typically come back really well on the Preakness. And I think one of the things that's really cool about this story is, you know, Lucas obviously and sort of famously loves the Preakness. He loves coming to Baltimore. He always tries to have a horse in the Preakness. And the last several years, it's been that horse is not good. You know, he's not going to win the Preakness. But it's cool to see him coming back with actually some bullets in his gun. And So I think she's going to be live. I mean, I'm going to give her a long look. I think Chad Brown sent an early voting. I think, you know, he did the exact same thing with Cloud Computing, and that's the other type of Preakness winner is the like kind of super lightly raced horse that has shown a lot of talent, and that's kind of what early voting is, So I think, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting race, and I think the Philly angle is a huge boon to the Preakness. In the absence of the Derby winner, having Wayne Lucas in a Philly is kind of your next best story.
No, I've said the same thing. I think putting her in gives a nice story that will follow through the whole week, Wayne Lucas and the Philly. And she probably has to step it up, but I don't think that's out of the question. I do think she's going to be an interesting player on Saturday. Frank, before we let you go, just wanted to talk also a little Maryland racing in general. Again, you do a great job of covering that on the racing biz. And just go back a week or so to the wrap-up to the Laurel Spring meet, because trainer Brittany Russell winds up with a meet title, and you can see it coming going back, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago. She was up and coming in a big way, and she winds up with the meet title. And maybe more interesting, the jockey side, it was an apprentice jockey. You know, Maryland always kind of a great breeding ground for potential jockeys coming out of their apprenticeships, but an apprentice jockey wins the meet title at Laurel. So it was a kind of a fun spring meet down there.
Yeah, it really was. You know, I was joking with somebody the other day that as somebody who reports on this stuff, I feel like I don't even need to go to the, you know, for the feature race of the day. I could just call Brittany in the morning and ask her how she's going to feel later on when she wins it. And, you know, because she not only is winning a lot of races and winning at a high percentage, but she's getting better horses than most other people. So she always has horses in the allowance races and the maiden specials, and so she's really really doing well, and certainly somebody to keep an eye on for folks who don't follow Maryland all that much. You know, keep an eye on Brittany's horses when they travel, because she's sending out some real horses. And then, yeah, the kid Jaron Barbosa, he won his first two races to start his racing career here in the United States, and his first one was just a really professional, you know, save ground, tip out, go on and win. It was like, boy, that was pretty good. And he just keeps on winning. Horses are really running for him. And he's riding in Maryland. He's also riding at Parks. I think this is a guy that is going to, if he manages to stay healthy and he keeps riding like this, he's going to make a very strong case for an Eclipse as a champion apprentice.
Yeah, that to me, as an Eclipse voter, that always goes a long way. When an apprentice can win a meet title, that kind of automatically stands out a little bit. He's going to be fun to watch, no doubt about it. Frank, as always, appreciate the conversation. And so you're going to be at Pimlico all week?
Oh, yeah, yeah. As soon as when we hang up, I'm going to head up in that direction. And, right now you're kind of calm before the storm, but pretty soon, you know, you're going to start to have a bunch of horses on the grounds and people buzzing around. And, I've been putting together, we'll have a team of about five or six people covering stuff on the racingbiz.com. We'll have video, we'll have a photographer there. So we're going to blanket Pimlico for the next several days and hopefully give people a good sense of what it's like to be there.
Ah, nice, nice, nice. And are you going to the Alibi breakfast?
Yes, yes. Happy to see Joe Clancy and our friend Joe Clancy and our friend Mike McAdam.
Absolutely.
Getting awards. A good upstate guy. So I was happy for those guys and look forward to seeing them there and maybe having a beer with people and catching up. So it should be fun. And, you know, the Alibi breakfast was originally in concept kind of a joke, you know, kind of like a fun thing where people say humorous things and taunt each other. And it kind of has gotten a little serious over the years and everybody's a little buttoned up. But having Dwayne Lucas there always is good for a laugh, because he's the one guy who still kind of does it the old way. And so I always look forward to what he has to say.
Well, get a Racing Biz Twitter picture of McAdam and Clancy, and I will be sure to retweet, because they're amongst the cast of semi-regulars, I guess, on Racing Across America, certainly up at Saratoga. And I tweeted out when both of those were announced as award winners for their writing. Big thumbs up to McAdam and Clancy, so congratulations to them. But also great writing at theracingbiz.com. And again, concentrating on the Mid-Atlantic and some Maryland. So a lot of lead up and coverage of the Preakness coming up this week. And as I say, nobody better to reach out to talk about that than you, Mr. Frank Vespi. So we appreciate the conversation and we'll talk again.
It's my pleasure, Seth. Thanks for having me. Look forward to catching up with you soon. And by the way, happy betting at the Preakness.
I appreciate that. Thanks a lot. Frank Vespi, again, theracingbiz.com. Definitely check it out. You can get that counterpoint, which was very good. You can also get the archive of the Eric Reed interview from yesterday. And as I say, this coming week, a lot of coverage leading up to and recapping Black Eyed Susan Preakness weekend down at Pimlico. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this edition of Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. I'll be back at this point, about an hour and a half or so. We'll be back for OTB Live on a Sunday afternoon. I'm going to take a look at a little Belmont, a little Monmouth, and more on a Sunday afternoon after a nice stakes afternoon at Belmont, but still great racing to come on this Sunday afternoon as well. So thanks for joining us, as always, on Racing Across America. And as I say, we'll be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.